This is the voice of the Trumpet Magazine. News, economy, politics, trends, discovery, health, family, the Bible, the future. This is Trumpet Hour.
Thank you so much for listening into Trumpet Hour today. I'm Joel Hilliker. The government is meant to protect us from the bad guys, but what happens when they are the bad guys? A couple of recent stories show FBI agents actually goading American citizens into criminal behavior and then arresting them for it. We'll hear a report from Trumpet writer Andrew Miller about how they may have been the primary impetus behind a plot to kidnap Michigan Governor Gretchen Whitmer. And we'll talk about how similar evidence has cropped up regarding the supposed January 6th insurrection. It's really a chilling look at some of what is taking place in America's government today. Scientists have been working to launch the James Webb Space Telescope for some years now, and its launch date was recently postponed to sometime in November. There's a good reason for these delays, as we'll hear in a report from Trumpet contributor Harley Breath. He's going to explain the purpose of this telescope and how scientists are trying to pull off an almost impossible feat. But if they are successful, it promises to dramatically expand our understanding and appreciation of the universe. In our third segment, we'll talk about the health benefits of vitamin D. Jörg Mardian will tell us how most of us need to be getting out into the sun more, and it can actually help boost our resistance to COVID-19. At the end of the show, I want to give you some thoughts about gardening, but spiritual gardening, bearing fruit in your life, and how you can do that and for what purpose. So let's get started. We'll learn about this deeply concerning corrupt activity of the FBI in this report from Andrew Miller.
The United States Federal Bureau of Investigation is supposed to enforce the rule of law. But what is it actually doing? We've learned from Inspector General Michael Horowitz's report that the FBI manipulated documents, concealed exonerating evidence, and advanced false claims to get a warrant to spy on the Trump campaign during the 2016 presidential election. We've also learned from investigative journalist at Revolver News that FBI agents may have orchestrated the 2021 U.S. Capitol breach to force President Donald Trump out of office and discredit anyone saying the election was stolen. And now we are learning that FBI agents played a significant role in a plot to kidnap Michigan Governor Gretchen Whitmer. On October 8, 2020, 1 month before the presidential election, the FBI announced the arrest of 13 Wolverine Watchmen militiamen on charges that they were plotting to kidnap Whitmer and take her to Wisconsin to try her as a tyrant for her COVID-19 lockdown orders. The government has admitted that undercover FBI agents helped bring down the Wolverine Watchmen, but a new examination of the case by BuzzFeed News revealed that these numerous informants and agents did much more than passively observe and report on the actions of the militia they infiltrated. Instead, about a dozen FBI agents pushed for and orchestrated nearly every aspect of the kidnapping plot. There were 13 militiamen arrested, and there were 12 FBI informants and agents. So basically, half the people involved in pushing forward this plot were working for the government. According to the BuzzFeed examination, the extent of the FBI's involvement raises questions as to whether there would have even been a conspiracy without them. A longtime government informant from Wisconsin, for example, helped organize a series of meetings around the country where many of the alleged plotters first met one another and the earliest notions of the plan took root, some of those people say. The Iraq war vet, for his part, became so deeply enmeshed in a Michigan militia group that he rose to become its second in command, encouraging members to collaborate with other potential suspects and paying for their transportations to meetings. He prodded the alleged mastermind of the kidnapping plot to advance his plan, then baited the trap that led to the arrest. Now, throughout its century-plus history, the FBI has relied on undercover informants and agents to stop and arrest criminals. But sometimes the FBI has gone well beyond exposing a criminal operation. This appears to be what it did with these militiamen. It provided the militiamen with organization, finances, logistics, and perhaps even encouragement to carry out a kidnapping plot that otherwise may have remained idle talk. Then they sprung a trap on the militiamen in a deliberate attempt to discredit those who say government lockdowns are unconstitutional and undermine American citizens still clinging to their rights. When people working for the government push someone to conspire or commit a crime that they would not otherwise have done, the government is guilty of entrapment, which is illegal, not to mention evil. In court, government prosecutors have tried to draw a connection between the Wolverine Watchmen kidnapping plot and the later breach of the U.S. Capitol. So it is fair conjecture that the FBI may have infiltrated the U.S. Capitol protest as well for similar reasons, to discredit those who say government lockdowns are unconstitutional and to undermine citizens who are still clinging to their rights. It's also fair conjecture that FBI agents and informants, perhaps many FBI agents and informants, infiltrated the protest and were partially or primarily responsible for entrapping people who would not otherwise have trespassed. The 13 militiamen charged in the plot to kidnap Governor Whitmer chose to go along with their FBI co-conspirators and are obviously responsible for their own actions, whatever those actions truly were. But that does not change the much more important fact that the FBI has become a politicized agency that uses fake dossiers, entrapment, and other immoral, illegal, and powerful resources against American citizens to erode their constitutional rights. Governors like Whitmer and radical Washington liberals like Joe Biden and those handling him are pushing harder and harder against the freedom of religion, freedom of speech, freedom of press, freedom of assembly, the right to bear arms, protection from unreasonable search and seizure, the right to a speedy and public trial, and the rights of states and their people. Many Americans realize this fact and are stockpiling toilet paper, hand sanitizer, beans, bread, sugar, chicken, respiratory mask, body armor, ammunition, and guns. They do not trust the government to respect their rights or their votes, and they are preparing for the worst. Meanwhile, the Biden administration uses the U.S. Capitol breach as an excuse to purge the military and conservatives and make it more political and socialist. Yet one side effect will be that the pool of trained officers motivated to join militia groups will grow. A civil war between the deep state and the American people is no longer unimaginable fiction. Trump editor-in-chief Gerald Fleury wrote in his article, The Hidden Message of the Horowitz Report, "The Horowitz Report reveals how Barack Obama and his inner circle almost destroyed the United States by changing America from a constitutional republic into an authoritarian dictatorship run by powerful, unelected bureaucrats, civil servants, military leaders, and intelligence agents. Key Obama administration officials lied, concealed evidence, and manipulated documents to spy on U.S. citizens and destroy Donald Trump's presidency. And the whole scandal was orchestrated from the very top." So it's clear that the U.S. government does not expect citizens to remain peaceful in the future, just like citizens do not expect the government to allow them their constitutional rights. This government corruption and declining trust in government institutions are symptoms of a greater sickness in the nation. The prophet Isaiah wrote about this spiritual sickness in chapter 1, verses 4 through 7 of the biblical book bearing his name. These verses say, "Ah, sinful nation, a people laden with iniquity, seed of evildoers, children that are corruptors, they have forsaken the Lord, and they have provoked the Holy One of Israel to anger. They are gone away backward. Why should you be stricken anymore? You will revolt more and more. The whole head is sick and the whole heart is faint. From the sole of the foot, even unto the head, there's no soundness in it, but bruises, wounds, and putrefying sores, they have not been closed, neither bound up, neither mollified with ointment. Your country is desolate. Your cities are burned with fire. Your land, strangers devour it in your presence. It is desolate as overthrown by strangers." Now, this passage describes cause and effect. The government is sick and the nation is faint. But why? Because the people are laden with iniquity, blasphemy, corruption, covetousness, miseducation, family breakdown, hatred, idolatry, murder, sexual sins, thievery. These have consumed America. People have abandoned personal responsibility and biblical morality for selfish individualism, social welfare, and materialism. They are apathetic, looking to the government to provide and dictate instead of educating themselves, working harder, and relying on God. By delegating more and more power to the central authority of a human-run government, American citizens have created an administrative state with the power to hand them back their tax money and the ability to steal their freedoms. While millions of Americans may now be waking up to the threat of the FBI and other sprawling, unconstitutional, deep state departments, they are turning to the wrong answer. Their populist revolution does not address the root cause of this crisis. Corruption and division in America are leading to a conflict so devastating that the whole country will be laid desolate and its cities will burn with fire. One man or government department does not cause these problems. Ultimately, they are caused by the sins of the American people as a whole, and only true repentance toward God by the people can prevent the sickness in America's government from escalating into full-scale revolution and war.
Thank you very much for that, Andrew. You mentioned several examples of abuses of power on the government's part in the early part of that report. There is quite a bit to suggest that maybe something similar took place with FBI agents and the January 6th, quote, insurrection. Can you tell us about that?
Yeah, that is quite an interesting story that still we're still getting more and more information about. That BuzzFeed News article I quoted here about the Governor Whitmer kidnapping plot provides just a ton of evidence, like names, dates, organizations, showing how the FBI infiltrated this militia group in Michigan, basically in an attempt to discredit all militia groups and all those who say that government lockdowns are unconstitutional. But it's actually, even though that BuzzFeed article is probably the best sourced of information for that kidnapping plot, it's not the first time I've heard of it. It was reported on over a month ago by that article in Revolver News I mentioned, where the journalists there, they had mentioned that they'd seen that they were investigating this kidnapping plot, and that there were plenty of federal agents that had infiltrated this militia group. And then they raised the interesting question that they said of the there were several militia groups at the January 6th protest. A couple of the big three ones the government's been pretty concerned about, groups like the Oath Keepers, the Proud Boys, and the Three Percenters. But oddly enough, they've arrested 500 people, over 500 people, for taking part in those protests. But a lot of the organizers from those three big militia groups, from the Oath Keepers, the Proud Boys, and the Three Percenters, have not been arrested. They know who they are, but they've not been arrested. And so the question comes, like, well, why haven't they arrested those ones? Like, there's some, like, Antifa activists they haven't arrested, but that makes sense. The government's shown a clear bias towards Antifa and Black Lives Matter. But normally, if you've got, like, a predominantly white nationalist militia group, the government jumps all over that. Like,
right.
Those are the type of people they want to so you actually had, like, people from an actual white nationalist militia group at this protest, and Biden's warning that white nationalism is the greatest threat to America since the Civil War, and you haven't indicted them. Mm-hmm. And they bring a point is that really the only explanation anyone can think of at this point is those people haven't been indicted because the FBI has infiltrated the Oath Keepers, the Proud Boys, and the Three Percenters, the same as they infiltrated these Wolverine Watchmen. Yeah. And they had informants on the ground that if those informants were acting the same as these informants in the Michigan case, because in the Michigan case, like, the majority of the logistics and planning was not done by the militia. It was done by the FBI informants and the FBI agents, and the militia just went along with it. So if that same thing happened with the Oath Keepers and the Proud Boys and the 3%ers at that January 6th protest, it's extremely likely that something very similar happened on January 6th during the Capitol breach, where the FBI found out about this rally way before the time. They already had informants in these three militia groups. They planned the breach into the Capitol, and it worked brilliantly because, like I said, you had at least a dozen senators ready to contest election fraud during the certification that day. And then they backed down due to the Capitol breach. They didn't want to inflame tensions. But if it was the FBI informants who haven't been indicted yet at the Capitol breach that were pushing for that, then the entire thing could have been set up as like a patsy operation.
There really is so much about that January 6th insurrection that is very concerning when you start adding up all of the evidence of the fact that there were Antifa supporters who were inciting the Trump supporters and who in many cases were at the forefront of breaking windows and some of the more violent acts that took place. You had Capitol Police that were essentially inviting people into the Capitol, just standing aside as they were trespassing on that property. And you add to that this evidence of the FBI actually being involved and maybe being some of the incitement as well, amplified by this Whitmer case. It's just extremely concerning to see how far the government is willing to go to attack its enemies in ways that you really just never should happen in any state, let alone the United States of America. We've been talking with trumpet writer Andrew Miller about this evidence that the FBI has actually been entrapping American citizens. He's written an article about this, Whitmer kidnapping revealed as FBI plot. You can find that up at thetrumpet.com right now. Go check that out. Thanks very much, Andrew.
Thanks.
This is the voice of the Trumpet News Magazine. You're listening to Trumpet Hour.
Scientists have given us spectacular views of the universe through advanced telescopes, and the most advanced telescope ever by a wide margin is scheduled to launch later this year, as we will now hear in this report from Harley Breath.
1995, Hubble Deep Field. Over the course of 10 days, the Hubble telescope stared at a seemingly blank point in the sky, approximately the size of a tennis ball from 3 football fields away. And this series of exposures revealed within that single point in the sky about 3,000 galaxies. Now, a typical galaxy can have about 100 million or even 100 billion stars, so you do the math for the whole sky, and this number is huge. One astrophysicist said the number would be a 10 with 22 zeros after it. That's how many stars would be in the whole sky. So this Hubble Deep Field was perhaps the most influential image ever taken for space exploration, and it set the imaginations of astronomers and ordinary people around the world on fire. 1 year later, work began on a new, even more advanced telescope that would ultimately become known as the James Webb Space Telescope. Scientists, and all of us, wanted to discover more. Hubble's view of the universe has far transcended Earth-based telescopes, but it has its limits. Its instruments mainly detect the ultraviolet wavelengths of the electromagnetic spectrum, the same wavelengths visible to the human eye. We call it visible light. There are many other wavelengths that Hubble cannot detect, however. Add to this the fact that the universe is not static. In the 1920s, astronomer Edwin Hubble measured wavelengths of light coming from other galaxies and found that distant objects were drifting away from our galaxy. His work, and that of other astronomers, including those using the Hubble telescope, has established that the universe is expanding in all directions. As the universe expands, the light traveling through it also expands. What starts out as ultraviolet light has its wavelength stretched until it actually becomes infrared light. And this process is sometimes referred to as red shift. Our eyes cannot see infrared light, and neither can Hubble. Astronomers want to see that light and learn what it teaches us. So they knew the James Webb Space Telescope would need to be a dedicated infrared instrument. And they also knew that its primary mirror would need to be huge. The bigger a telescope is, the more light photons that it can collect, and the better the resolution of the images it produces. So the team building the Webb telescope has given it a primary mirror of more than 21 feet wide. That will make it the largest telescope ever launched into space. It's so large that it can't even fit inside the cargo bay of the rocket that will launch it. So that's a big problem. What was the solution to this dilemma? Origami. The telescope will launch with its 18 mirror segments configured into a folded position. And the launch itself presents many challenges of its own. It's been reported that about 300 to 400 operations must occur perfectly the first time without fail. If those operations do take place, the James Webb will soar into its resting orbital position. And when I say it will rest in orbit, I don't mean orbiting Earth. Rather than orbiting about 340 miles above Earth, as Hubble does, this telescope will be sent much further. It will outdistance the Moon, which is about 240,000 miles from Earth. Webb will be sent 4 times further, 1 million miles away. And its orbital resting place will be what's known as the Earth-Sun Lagrange 2 point, or L2 point. NASA.gov describes these points as, quote, positions in space where objects sent there tend to stay put. At Lagrange points, the gravitational pull of two large masses precisely equals the centripetal force required for a small object to move with them, end quote. The L2 is not only a position where the telescope would tend to stay put, but also a dark, cold area optimal for infrared sensory instruments. Orbiting at L2 will also prevent the telescope from going in and out of the shadows of both the Earth and the Moon. And that's actually a problem that the Hubble has to deal with. It can't operate 24/7 in observation because of that problem. When a problem was discovered with Hubble's primary mirror, astronauts were sent to repair it 5 times. But Webb will be far beyond reach. The moment that it leaves the launch pad, human beings will never be able to reach it again. Everything must be perfect the first time. Tom Weiss, president of Northrop Grumman, said, "There's nothing I can say that can come close to describing how technically difficult this telescope is. We are at the verge of impossible." If the hundreds and thousands of highly technical factors involved all lead to the Webb telescope reaching the L2 point, it will then be required to operate in the vacuum of space at an ambient temperature of nearly 400 degrees below zero Fahrenheit. Traveling into those cryogenic temperatures puts an even greater stress on the James Webb than launch does, but the telescope was designed to operate in harsh cold. The greater threat is posed by the sun's heat. To ward off that threat is a critical element of the telescope, the sun shield. To view the infrared light stretching across the universe from faint, faraway objects, the Webb telescope must remain cold and stable. NASA.gov says, quote, to protect the telescope from external sources of light and heat, like the sun, earth, and moon, as well as from heat emitted by the observatory itself, Webb has a five-layer, tennis court-sized sunshield that acts like a parasol providing shade. End quote. So the telescope will always be on the dark side of the Earth from the sun, and the sunshield will always be between the Earth, sun, or moon, and those golden mirrors. So what are we going to see if all of these complex calculations, the manufacturing, the space flight, deployment, and operation of the James Webb Space Telescope succeeds? Again, what will we see? It will see light beyond the view of any other instrument ever built. It will fill a crucial void in mankind's armory of observatories and spacecraft, viewing the universe in the near-infrared and mid-infrared with a robust set of optical instruments and other scientific instruments. This infrared telescope will peer through the dust of the ultraviolet images for which Hubble has become so famous. It will see light from much further away and consequently from further back in time. Astrophysicist Matt Mountain said, the real excitement of the James Webb will be the things that we didn't anticipate. Whenever you go into the unknown, you discover things you didn't expect, and those are going to be the most interesting of all. The Hubble Space Telescope originally launched about 4 months after the Philadelphia Church of God, the publisher of the Trumpet magazine, began in December 1989. PCG Pastor General Gerald Fleury has repeatedly drawn attention to the images it has captured as an inspiring view into the universe and the future of mankind. He said in a 2013 Key of David program titled Our Awesome Universe Potential, quote, I strongly believe that God had a hand in the success of the Hubble Space Telescope, end quote. Webb is NASA's successor to Hubble, so what then are the implications for this project? King David wrote, the heavens declare the glory of God, and the firmament showeth his handiwork. In Psalm chapter 19, verse 1. Does God want us to see more of what he created? Does he want to give us an even more vivid understanding of his mind and power? The James Webb has been delayed extensively and repeatedly, and so it could very well be delayed again. But it's just a tiny mishap away from complete failure. But if it succeeds, it might be an indicator that God has had a hand in this mission too. Whatever new vistas may be unveiled in space, whatever unexpected discoveries, whatever is seen in the depths of the vast unknown, it is actually linked together with the destiny of the human beings who are straining so hard to peer out through the heavens. Mr. Fleury wrote in the May-June Trumpet, quote, here is a most exciting truth revealed in your Bible. The condition of these planets is closely linked with your incredible human potential. End quote. He said that, as inspiring as the February landing of the Perseverance rover on Mars was, this biblical truth makes it a million times more so. In Romans chapter 8, verses 18 through 19, in the RSV read, I consider that the sufferings of this present time are not worth comparing with the glory that is to be revealed to us. For the creation waits with eager longing for the revealing of the sons of God. And Mr. Fleury wrote, in this convulsing world, we need our universe dream. We need to see the stupendous possibility and the eternal majesty God is offering human beings. Nothing can stimulate our imagination like comprehending our universe potential. End quote. God plainly declares to any who will believe not only that he created the universe, but that he created it to be populated. You can see that in Isaiah chapter 45. It's his zealous desire to plant it with life and to build his God family forever throughout the cosmos. Again, that's Isaiah chapter 51. And that is what we are looking at when we look at the stars. The James Webb Space Telescope should light our imaginations on fire and motivate us to search God's Word for the reason for the heavens. Looking into your own Bible, you can see beyond Hubble and beyond the James Webb to a vast, ever-expanding universe, a truly immense inheritance awaiting mankind.
Thank you very much, Harley. I appreciate that. You did a full program for The Sun Also Rises, which I loved. And I really encourage listeners who enjoyed this truncated, edited Reader's Digest version of that to go and listen to that. It's nearly 40 minutes long, 40 minutes, and just excellent. And it's called See Beyond. If you go to thetrumpet.com to The Sun Also Rises, you can find that program very easily. But let's just talk about the launch date of this. It's meant to be later this year. It's obviously, as you said, it's been delayed several times, and there's good reason for that when you consider everything that's at stake here. But when is it meant to launch now?
I just checked recently, and NASA updated and said that it will be launched no earlier than November 2021. So you can see couched in the language there is not a 100% confidence, but yeah, no earlier than November 2021. Yeah. Possibly later this year.
Well, when you look at all that has been put and invested in this, how much is at stake and how desperately they want to make sure that it's exactly right, and knowing once you push the button on that launch pad, then you're kind of stuck with the result. So it's hard to begrudge them their ultra cautious approach. But one thing that I really enjoyed about the program that you did for The Sun Also Rises, you went into a lot of the detail on just how refined the different componentry of this telescope is. And one thing you talked about was how important the mirror is. Maybe you could just talk about that a little bit.
Sure. So the mirror is kind of an iconic part of it. If you look at it, it stands out in a huge way. Like I said, it's about 21 feet wide. It's a series of hexagonal mirrors, 18 of them, that are fit together to become, in effect, one mirror. But what they've done is they've taken beryllium, which I didn't know a lot about before reading about this, but they've taken this specific element, and they've used 9 machines for 8 years straight to create these 18 mirrors. So that's how long it takes to kind of work with this element. And they machined it to this incredible precision required. It's something like 20 nanometers surface accuracy. So we're talking as smooth as you can possibly get any surface, basically. And on top of this beryllium, they have a super thin layer of gold. And it's not just to make it look pretty. It does. It looks amazing. Uh-huh. In fact, when they first came out with it, there were some of these images they took, NASA, of maybe a man or two standing in front of these giant gold mirrors. It was just, it's amazing. It is dazzling. But it's not for looks. It's actually because gold itself has a high reflectivity in infrared. In fact, they have a observatory up in space now, the Spitzer, that also has gold mirrors. So it's been used before. It'll probably be used again. But it is pretty incredible, the mirrors. That's just one aspect. I mean, you could go on for a long
right.
time.
Yeah. Yeah, which again, I would encourage people to go and listen to that other program, The Sun Also Rises. You can hear that at Trumpet Radio. We'll link to that in the show notes for the program. And also, we're about to send the September issue of the Philadelphia Trumpet, and we have an article from Harley in there, plus the infographic that has a lot more details. We've been talking with the Trumpet contributor Harley Breath about the James Webb Space Telescope, scheduled to launch no earlier than November, according to NASA's latest pronouncement. We really appreciate you coming on and sharing that with us.
Thanks a lot. A lot of fun.
This is Trumpet Hour with Joel Hilliker.
If you had to name one of the greatest natural medicines known to man, what would it be? Well, here's a hint. It's not a vaccine, but it's free, it's readily available, and it might be important, as important to our health as food and exercise. So why are so many experts downplaying its preventative abilities? To talk about this, we have via Skype from his office in British Columbia, personal trainer and holistic nutritionist, Jörg Mardian. Hello, Jörg.
Hello there.
So let's eliminate the suspense any longer. What is this natural medicine that we're talking about?
Well, this natural medicine is vitamin D. We could call it a natural wonder drug. And if this was a true medicine, it would, statistics show vitamin D dramatically reduces cancer. It reduces up to 70 or 90 health problems or diseases. If this was a true medicine, it would make a gazillion dollars and stock prices will go into the stratosphere. So can we call it a wonder drug, a natural wonder drug? Absolutely.
And how do we get vitamin D?
Well, of course, the best way is to get it through the sun. The sun will hit your skin, and that goes through a conversion process, and it's actually a hormone, and then it produces vitamin D. So there's perhaps, experts are saying by you getting out in the sun, there's no other supplement that affects human health as much as vitamin D. It just that it has the ability to interact and affect more than 1,200 genes in the body. So by you getting out in that sunlight and letting this beautiful sunlight hit your skin for 20 minutes, at least a day, which is certainly not overdoing it, you're getting all that protective ability of the sun's rays. And one of the things that's really tragic about vitamin D is that the powerful effects that I'm talking about right now are largely unknown to the public. So not only do we have a vitamin D deficiency in North America, a true vitamin D deficiency, because most people are deficient, there's another epidemic of ignorance about the true effects of what this vitamin does. And Americans really spend more than over 90% of their time indoors right now. I was shocked at this statistic. And more than three quarters of people have deficient vitamin D blood levels. So that means their levels on a blood test are under 20 nanogram per mil. And that's very low. And so millions have what we call a vitamin D insufficiency as well. And that's just slightly better. So you can have be deficient. And that would register at 20 nanogram per mil. And then sufficiency is 20 to 30. There's a fine line between the two. It's really what you're doing between those two lines is you're practicing minimum wage nutrition. What we really need to opt for, experts tell us, is 40 to 80 nanogram per mil when you get your blood tested. And that's really where the true benefits of vitamin D hit us. And, if we ask the question, why are we so deficient? Why are we spending so much time indoors and not getting these benefits? And I think it's just people find it challenging to get outside on a regular basis. We're stuck indoors on our jobs. We're stuck under overhead lights, right? A lot in North America, we're stuck in limited, strong sunlight.
Right.
So even if we do spend time outdoors, it's not as strong as it should be. And a lot of it is people are fear burning themselves.
Right. Yeah, that's definitely on a lot of people's minds, especially in the hot summer months. You want to limit your exposure to the sun, or you're slathering on. I actually, during the summer camp, I saw for the first time SPF 70 sunscreen. I remember years ago it was more like 8, 10, 12, 15 maybe. But this is really, really thick sunscreen. So we're really working hard to protect ourselves from the sun's rays. If you're putting on that type of stuff, are you even gaining the benefits of vitamin D if you're out in the sun?
No, absolutely not. I'll give you a comparison. If you use a sunscreen with as little effect as a 15-factor protection, okay, never mind the 70, you're cutting the vitamin D production by 99%.
Wow.
So we're overkilling this. We're using a bazooka. And
now, you do want to avoid sunburn. So how do you gain the benefits of the sun without overdoing it?
Well, you can stay in the sun for 20 to 30 minutes as long as you don't burn, right? Some people burn easily, of course, but if you're not burning, the experts say that 30 minutes in the sun will give you 10,000 units of vitamin D. Okay, that's a lot. If you were taking a vitamin or a supplement with 10,000, that would be, here in Canada, would be considered illegal. Right, because they say they call for 800 international units of vitamin D, which is, to me, is criminally low. And when you consider the sun giving us such a big amount, and when you consider that up to 90 diseases happen because, and this is a fact, because of vitamin D deficiency, we can actually work on 90 diseases, avoid them with sufficient sunlight. It's criminal to have it that low. It should be upped. There are other ways, of course, to get it into a diet. In a small way, you can get it through diet. There's not enough. You could eat fatty fish and egg yolks and dairy. And we don't eat that much beaver liver anymore.
I can't remember the last time I had beaver liver.
Exactly. So cod liver oil, beef liver, I said.
Oh, beef liver. That's different. Okay. I might have more of that.
Right. And cod liver oil. But most people don't get these. And then the doctors also say, look, our cholesterol is going up. We can't eat that much of these foods. So that's working against us. And so you can supplement, you know, and supplementation is a great way for most people to get it into them. And so if you see that you can get 10,000 in the sun, the experts say you need at least 4,000 international units a day to get your blood levels up, to even get them moving from a chronic state. So and you have to make sure when you do supplement, you know, the D3 variety, not the D2, which is in a lot of supplements and what doctors give you. So if you get a doctor gives you vitamin D2, you could still stay chronically low. It's man-made, whereas the D3 is natural.
So, but your point is that if you go out and get the sun that you need, then that's free.
Absolutely free. Cheap and free.
Why supplement, why pay for a supplement when it's in abundance right outside?
Well, there's various ways. You might not get outside because of your work. You might have night shift. You might be dark skinned, which really works against you. You might live in a climate where you just don't get enough sunlight. I mean, all those things work against you. Mm-hmm. If you can get it, I mean, all the power to you. And I do get outside a lot, and I feel fantastic when I do. But wintertime is another time. It's really hard to expose 60% of your skin in the winter. Mm-hmm. It gets a little chilly.
Right.
Right. So there's where supplementation goes in. And the reason that we get colds in the winter is because our stores, vitamin D stores in the fat of the body, and then that kind of dissipates as we go along in the winter. Once that reaches lower levels, then we easily catch those viral diseases, right? And so yeah. The supplements help at that point.
So is it, there are some people who say that vitamin D is actually toxic if you have too much of it. What do you say to those who believe that?
Well, if you're reading anything on the internet, that's just a pervasive debate, and it's actually more of a myth because it just doesn't happen in any large amounts. I mean, you have to really look for this, and you have to take it in doses of upwards to 50,000 to 1 million units a day, which is insane. And that's for an extended period of time to even approach the danger zone. So taking 10,000 a day, clinical trials show there's just no, even at 10,000 a day, there's no risk of adverse effects for adults.
No. So what about COVID-19? How effective is vitamin D at preventing this coronavirus?
Well, here's where it gets interesting. You know, we all know about vitamin D. We know of some of the benefits. But in the absence, and I'm going to say in the absence of a safe vaccine, because right now, over 12,000 people have died in the United States, according to the VAERS database, with vaccine-related issues. You know, it's time to consider whether vitamin D really dampens the risk of infection. So, and studies do seem to point at evidence that demonstrates when you have higher vitamin D blood levels, you reduce not only the rates of positive tests, you reduce the rates of hospitalization and mortality in direct relation to COVID-19. And there was a study at the University of East Anglia in England, and they compared average vitamin D tests levels in 20 European countries. This was so interesting, with mortality rates from COVID-19. And they found there was a significant relationship between the levels, low levels, and the number of deaths caused. And another study was even more specific. It noted that those who tested positive for COVID-19 and died, 98.9% were vitamin D deficient.
Wow.
And that's below that 20 nanogram per mil. And what that means is that they were almost certain to die when entering the hospital with COVID. Now, conversely, which is very interesting, mortality fell to 4.1% for patients who had enough vitamin D in their blood.
Wow, that's huge. That's a huge discrepancy.
Well, there is. If you chase this online, there's such negativity about this. And I find many studies that actually prove that there's a strong correlation. I mean, there's pooled data from so many studies that prove this association, especially with older people where vitamin D deficiency is endemic. And guess what? During the COVID crisis, who died most? The elderly. So that was interesting to me. So the only sensible conclusion when you look at the studies is that if you have sufficient blood levels of vitamin D of 40 nanogram per mil and up, which is they say that's the safe factor, it makes you less likely to get COVID-19. It makes you less likely to have a severe case of it and less likely to die. And that's great.
Yeah. Yeah. That's information that a whole lot of people would be interested to know. But like you said, it's very difficult to get that kind of information in mainstream sources where the prescriptions for COVID are basically the masks and the vaccines and so on. So to you have any final thoughts on just how to make sure that you're getting the right dose, that your blood has enough vitamin D in it?
The best way to put it is it's a powerful COVID deterrent. Okay, there's no cures out there, but it helps your body to fight. So the first thing is get out in the sun. If you have any possibility, if you even on your lunch hour, get out there, get out from under the overhead lights. Those are actually very hard on your health. If you have a lunch hour of a half an hour and you can get outside, even in the winter, I believe that does help you. You know, even the hands and the face exposed. Other than that, make sure that you get a varied diet that has vitamin D. And then, you know, make sure you don't slather on sunscreen in the summer. Just limit your being outside too much. Don't burn to a crisp. I mean, who wants those health effects, you know? And then in the winter, take some supplements, about 4,000 to 5,000 units a day. And that should help you get through the winter safely.
All right, very practical. We appreciate that. We've been talking with personal trainer and holistic nutritionist Jörg Mardian about the health benefits of vitamin D. He's working on an article that should appear soon at thetrumpet.com on the subject. Thank you very much, Jörg. Great to have you.
Thank you.
It's time for today's last word.
Tomatoes enjoy summers in Oklahoma, I've been delighted to learn. I'm not much of a gardener, but for some years I've loaded my little garden patch with several varieties of tomato plants. Harvest lasts several weeks, during which my children and I can collect a bucket full of fruit nearly every day. It's wonderfully gratifying. Two grapevines off my back porch, though, are much less impressive. Now and again, we'll be able to fill a medium-sized bowl with small clusters of grapes, enough for a snack, but not much of a harvest. I'm thankful that my family's sustenance isn't dependent on my success as a vine dresser. I can easily attribute my lack of produce to my lack of competence and lack of effort. But imagine a master farmer who works hard, who gives his crops every possible advantage, yet still doesn't receive the harvest his efforts should yield. This was God's frustrating experience with ancient Israel, and tragically with most of his people in this end time. Like any farmer, God planted Israel in order to get fruit. Isaiah 5 says that God has a vineyard and a very fruitful hill, and he fenced it and gathered out the stones thereof and planted it with the choicest vine and built a tower in the midst of it and also made a wine press therein, and he looked that it should bring forth grapes. God labored over and cared for and invested in the Israelites, protecting, watering, and nourishing them in the wilderness, planting them in the glorious promised land, removing enemy peoples, building his temple among them, being present with them. He exerted the same effort in modern times with spiritual Israel. When God makes that kind of investment, he expects fruit. He wants his people to flourish, flower, and produce fruit, spiritual fruit, that he can enjoy and use to feed other people. Think about all the effort God has devoted to you. We're all beneficiaries, but especially those in his church whom he's planted in good soil, given every nutrient in his word, watered with his spirit, bathed in his sunshine, diligently removed weeds in our character. So over time, he looks for fruit. And you should show the fruit of his spirit listed in Galatians 5, more of his love, joy, peace, patience, faith, self-control, and so on. A greater measure of his very nature. You should show more of his wisdom and his mind, have more acts that reflect his indwelling presence. That is sweet, wonderful fruit. That passage in Isaiah 5 goes on to show that ancient Israel and spiritual Israel in this end time brought forth wild fruit, corrupt, bitter grapes. God did all that he could to bring a marvelous harvest, yet these people gave him unusable produce, and he was left no choice but to lay the crop waste. God has an unusual challenge as a vine dresser. The fruit of his vine doesn't come inevitably given the right conditions. It actually has a will of its own. It can receive every good benefit and still refuse to produce. Jesus Christ said in John 15 that the way to be fruitful is to remain attached to him, the vine. If we abide in Christ, we'll bear much fruit, and even then God will prune us to improve our yield still more. But if we're fruitless, we're worthless to God. In Hosea 10, God uses the same analogy to make a slightly different accusation. He says, Israel is an empty vine. He brings forth fruit unto himself. According to the multitude of his fruit, he's increased the pagan altars. According to the goodness of his land, they've made goodly images. So this is a terrible affront to God. People using all of the advantages that he gave them to satisfy their own interests, to serve their own gods. That angers God when he sees his people wasting his blessings and care on themselves rather than producing fruit for him and for others, seeking their own things, not the things which are Jesus Christ's, taking credit for their blessings, allowing those blessings to draw them away from him rather than toward him. It's like a plant that puts all its energy into big, beautiful leaves, but whose fruit is hard, tiny, and tasteless. Christ condemned the hypocrites who gave alms, who prayed and fast to receive praise from men rather than to draw close to God. Verily I say unto you, he said, they have their reward. When we selfishly use or abuse the blessings God gives us, we can expect him to remove them. God says to us, as he said to Baruch, seek you great things for yourself? Seek them not. God wants us to fast to him, not even to eat and drink to ourselves. As Romans 14 says, for none of us lives to himself, and no man dies to himself. For whether we live unto the Lord. And whether we die unto the Lord. Whether we live, therefore, or die, we are the Lord's. It's a vivid picture we all need to remember. Never forget your purpose. You exist to produce fruit, not for yourself, but for God. It's to his credit and for his purposes and his glory. And the greater care God takes for you, the greater should be your yield. The richer your blessings, the more abundant should be your spiritual fruit, to the glory and for the use of the Master Gardener. I'm Joel Hilliker, and that will do it for today's Trumpet Hour. You can send me any thoughts on today's program to letters@thetrumpet.com. Thanks to my guests, Andrew Miller, Harley Breath, and Jorg Mardian. And thanks to Nick Irwin and Dwight Falk for engineering and production. I'll leave you with this thought from Nicolas Chamfort. In great matters, men show themselves as they wish to be seen, in small matters as they are. Thank you for joining us on Trumpet Hour. Until next time, keep watching your world.
You've been listening to Trumpet Hour on Trumpet Radio, 101.3 KPCG, and online at kpcg.fm. Understand your world.